Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
But you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Ah, can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Lo Neal, Dan Avone filling in for Willard and Dibs on a Friday. Gorgeous Friday, by the way, here in San Francisco. We're all 49ers as they get ready for the Buffalo Bills. As the 49ers look to get back to the 500 mark, and still, hey, listen, you're only a game back in the NFC West. You're chasing Seattle as well as the Arizona Cardinals, two good teams, but certainly I would think that the 49ers feel as though they are teams that they can catch and pass. And should that happen, and that's asking a lot, the 49ers then would be divisional champs. And what does that mean in terms of the playoff picture? You would have the number four seed. You'd be guaranteed to be at home for that first round, which most likely would be against Green Bay. We can get into the Packers because that is a very, very dangerous team that is very reminiscent to who they were last year when they put it into another gear right at about this time of the season. I want to get into Christian McCaffrey in just a bit, but the good news, obviously, is that Brock Purdy, as Kyle Shanahan stated earlier today, will be in uniform and will play for the San Francisco 49ers, meaning that he will start. However, on the other side of the ball, it is really concerning when you think of the number of injuries that are now beginning to stack up, Lo. So, once again, just to reiterate, that Nick Bosa will not be able to go. Jordan Elliott is out in concussion protocol. You're obviously already without Hargrave. The two cornerbacks, Charvarius Ward, there's still some uncertainty as to whether he will come back. But Deamador Lenore is not going to play on Sunday against the Buffalo Bills. You're obviously without Talon Ofunka. So now you're relying on Isaac Yiadom on one corner and then the kid Renato Green on the other. So you're really stretched not only on that D-line, as we have talked about, that has been much maligned throughout this entire season, right. But now the secondary becomes a serious concern because of the injuries to your two starting cornerbacks.
Yeah, I'm just shocked because when you're talking about this defense and you're saying, okay, who is the Niners defense? Where they're at? How are they, you know, where do you rank this guy? Where do you rank these guys out? Listen, they're 11th against the pass. I mean, they're 6th against the pass and they're 11th against the run. So when you look at this Niners defense and you think about it and you look at their record, and I told you, hey, look, if I said, hey, 11th against the run, you would say, man, this team has got to be over 500. They should be a team top 10, you know, a pretty good team. And then you're 6th against the pass and pass defense, but your record does not show that. And the games that we saw and what we've seen, it doesn't merit that. And that's what's so weird, because that's what people don't understand. Statistics can mean anything. Stats sometimes, and that's where you get in these analytics and those. Oh, yeah, well, they're 11th against the run. They're top 10 teams against the run. They're a top 10 team against the pass. You should be like, hey, man, you're like, okay, we should be competing, but they're not. So I look at this team and I look at the team. It's optimistic, you know, especially on game day, that it's like, man, you see they're playing good against the run. And then when teams have to run the ball, they're able to run it. When team has to throw the ball and it's a crucial situation, they are giving it up. So it's really interesting to watch this team, the way it's performed, when you look at the numbers and where they're ranked. But when a game, it doesn't merit that.
Just to kind of go even deeper on what Lo just said, kind of interesting, they are ranked sixth in total defense, meaning yards allowed,
right,
that they've allowed from opponents, but they're 20th in points allowed.
Mm. That's the part.
That says a lot. Yeah. That says just about everything you need to know.
So you're at a top six defense in total, and you're 11th against the run, six against the pass, and top 10 defense total, but you're 20th against scoring. And that hurts.
One of the areas that is really problematic now is the secondary. And they're going to rely on some kids. Now, I think everybody would agree that this was a good draft. Renardo Green, Malik Mustafa, Dominic Pooney was a huge find in the third round for the 49ers. But typically, Lo, don't you want to work in your rookies and give them an opportunity to sort of get their feet wet? And while they show that they can, you know, they're NFL ready, you do not necessarily want them starting against Buffalo on the road when you're talking about Renardo Green having to rely on Malik Mustafa. I think ideally, you like Talanoa Hufanga back there with the second-year player, Jair Brown, and giving Mustafa some run, who has clearly shown that he's a thumper in terms of run support. He's one of those guys.
He'll hit you.
Every time you see somebody like that, and I don't mean to make the comparisons, he's not Ronnie Lott, and he's not going to be Ronnie Lott, but for 49er fans, you know what it is that I'm talking about. When you see somebody come from the safety position downhill like that,
yeah,
and meeting runners in the hole, your mind can't help to think to number the greatest of all, that being number 42. But being this reliant on these guys, as far as, okay, you're now starting, you need to stop potentially the MVP, that being Josh Allen. It's a tall task for the kids at the end of the day.
It really is, but you're playing a team that just doesn't overwhelm you offensively. They just play consistent. If you watch Kansas City doesn't do a lot of great things. They just bend, but they don't break. They find a way to win. Buffalo is just a little bit more consistent. So, yeah, it's tough when you say, hey, I'm going to throw a rookie in there, and he's going to have to go play against, like you said, one of the most elite quarterbacks in this league. I tell you what, it's tough, but the 49ers have played with a lot of young guys this year, and Mustafa's been playing great the whole year, and he started this whole year. I don't think it's that. It's just the fact, can you be consistent? That's this biggest thing. You talked about this defense. You talk about where they're at defensively. Talk about if they are in total defense, number six overall. They're six against the pass. They're 11th against the run. But the consistency and where it shifts hugely is points allowed. You're number 20th. So if you have given up a lot of points and your inability to score has been the biggest differential, in my opinion. So, yes, it's tough to go on the road and throw a bunch of rookies in and go tell them, now go win me a ball game. But guess what? It is what it is. You're going to have to, because you've dug this hole. Now you got to find a way to dig a way out.
And anytime Nick Bosa isn't going to go, you know, we talked about Brock Purdy not being available. Now, obviously, with the NFL being so quarterback-centric, that's a huge blow. But Trent Williams, Nick Bosa, it's a coin toss when those, and neither one of those guys are going to be available. But Bosa, just to stay with the defense for a moment, if you have any shot, just like any other great quarterback, you got to put some pressure, you would think, on Josh Allen. And this becomes the big concern. You know, I do Wars this week with Ev. We got a show coming up tomorrow, and we always talk about, all right, if Steph's not in the game, who's your number two? As it relates to the 49ers, I think this has been a year-long question. In fact, it's pretty much been since Bosa's arrival, is who's the other guy? And they really haven't had one, aside from going back to 2019. But when you think about, I mean, since Dee Ford's departure and Dee Ford's that first year, there has not been a bookend to Nick Bosa. And so with Bosa out, is it Leonard Floyd? Who's the guy that has to step up and put pressure on Josh Allen coming up on Sunday?
It's got to be Floyd. It really has. You brought this guy in, and you need something. You need someone to put some pressure on this quarterback. You saw last week against Green Bay. Green Bay had plenty of time back there to throw the ball, and they were able to shred him. you saw Green Bay able to run the ball, had over 150 yards total in run game, and had, you know, was able to throw the ball around the field on crucial downs. So you're going to have to put some pressure, manufacture some type of pressure. I don't think Buffalo has great receivers. So you're going to have to put some pressure. You're going to have to put a spy guy on Josh, because if you do come at Josh, you know he can hurt you with his legs because he's big, he's physical, he can run through you, run over you. So you better put pressure on him, because if not, he's going to hurt you. He can scramble. He's a big guy. So you're going to be able to cover these guys. It's like, but can you tackle? The Niners you talked about last week, when you looked at Green Bay, I think they missed 13. Some of them had 20 tackles. Some said
10 in the first quarter.
When you miss that type of tackles and you're getting ready to play against the quarterback that has fun running through arm tackles, you're going to have to tackle this guy. And that's what this Niner team has to do, because offensively, you know, they're fourth in total offense. I mean, it's like when you look at the numbers really just, it doesn't show you what they're doing, because you're fourth in total offense. You're seventh in run with your rush game. You're throwing, you know, you're averaging over 300 and some, almost close to 400 yards in total offense, over 350, and you're losing. So when you look at just the measurables, you're like, man, what the heck is going on with this team? Why hasn't translated into wins? That's because you're 20th in far as giving up runs.
When you think about Sean McDermott, the head coach of the Buffalo Bills, it's pretty simple to me. Once he puts in the game tape of the Niners against the Green Bay Packers and he sees what Josh Jacobs did, and you've got James Cook, who is maybe a tier or a step below that of Josh Jacobs. But I know Josh Allen can throw it all over the yard, and we know that he can run. But aren't you just simply doing exactly what it is that Green Bay did and running right the hell at San Francisco and saying, prove me that you can stop us, especially in terms of between the tackles, because there's no need for us to get fancy. We're just going to go smash mouth.
Oh, without a doubt, Green Bay is going to say, show us. Green Bay already told him, hey, look, let's see if you can stop us from running. In Green Bay, they had no answer to stop Green Bay. Buffalo's going to look at this and say, okay, show us that you can stop the run. Show us that you've learned in a week. What have you been able to do? They're going to come at the Niners. They are going to run the ball. They are not going to back down. They are going to run the ball, and they're going to see if the Niners has fixed this problem.
And as you've talked about, but just to reiterate once again, the worst thing is, well, it's once you get to the second levels and you're relying on linebackers and safeties, as good as Malik Mustafa is, as good as Renardo Green can be at times, when they have to make tackles, you're in trouble. Because those guys like to be clean. Like, every linebacker does not like somebody in on his body. And so, again, it becomes about the big fellas up front in the trenches and being able to stuff guys in gaps. And if that's not happening, you're, first of all, James Cook's going to have a huge game. Josh Allen's going to have a huge game. But then you start to eat clock. And then you have, because when you're running the football and you have 10 to 12 play drives and you're out there in that weather for that long, I mean, you're pretty much done by halftime.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see, have the Niners fixed the problem? Have they fixed the run defense? Because what we've seen with the Niners' run defense and their inability to stop the run on a consistent basis, teams are not going to say, we're going to stop running. Oh, we're not running the ball. We're going to throw the ball. They are not. They're going to say, no, we're going to test you out and seeing what your coaching staff, seeing what this team has done, is see if you got better against the run. And right now, the Niners have not shown you that they've gotten better against the run. And that's a huge problem.
You know, we talked about Steve Tasker, and we had him on the show just moments ago. And it's funny, the Don Beebe and the Steve Tasker, that happens every year in terms of chasing down Leon Letton. For those of you that
that was classic.
You guys can Google it or get into YouTube and find what it is that Don Beebe did chasing down. Oh, God, all those Buffalo Bill teams with Jim Kelly and the K-Gun and Marv Levy, four consecutive Super Bowls. Can you even imagine? That is so difficult. But I just wanted to put this to you. Listen, I played high school football, and I remember our coach, St. Ignatius, shout out, right here in the city, would always say, this is going to win or lose us four or five football games. We practice it at the beginning of practice, at the end of practice. When you get to the NFL level, how important is special teams? And what sort of precedence does it take when you get into practice on a daily basis?
I think special teams are unreal. I don't think...
Is that where you started your career?
Absolutely. You know what? When you get drafted, most guys have to go show that they can play special teams. You have to show, hey, I can play special teams. I had to play special teams. I was on kickoff. I was on kickoff, kickoff return. I played those teams, and I had to be able to do it. But I'm telling you, that is a main focal point of any team, special teams. Games are won and lost on special teams. I remember playing, and I think you remember this too, the Tennessee Titans. I'm on the Tennessee Titans every single Friday. We would practice the home run throwback, but it was called AKA the Music City Miracle. This is what happened. Every Friday we'd go out. I would be the up back. They would probably always kick the ball to me. I would run halfway across the other side of the field. I would throw it over to either Wycheck. He'd pitch it back to Dyson. It was Mason, because Derek Mason was the guy originally. Yeah. With 17 seconds, we're playing against the Buffalo Bills. We know that we need a miracle. We call the play. It's called a home run throwback, and we said, we're doing it. We are running this play. I remember going over to Frank Wycheck. I said, they're going to kick this ball short. I know that they're coming to me. I had a fit, and I didn't tell the other guys because I wanted them to react and do the same thing that they always do. Frank and I knew. Frank knew to come up. I caught the ball. The ball's coming. It's going really, really slow. I catch the ball. I take 5-6 steps run. I pitch it back to Wycheck, him over to, you know, Dyson, because Ike Berg was number two. Mason was number one. Ike Berg was number two. Kevin Dyson was the third guy that was supposed to be on there. So you're talking about the third string guys that paid attention to detail, that knew what was going to take place against Buffalo. We score that. We win the game and end up Callum pulling us to the Super Bowl. So when you're asking me how critical, how special are special teams, how important is attention to details in a football game, I'll tell you what. Go ask the Raiders how special teams are just attention to details. They have an opportunity to beat Kansas City and give Kansas City, and Buffalo's probably watching this game, give Kansas City a chance, give Buffalo to be the number one seed. They're playing against the Raiders. The Raiders, self-inflicted wound. We talk about those things. A false start, fumble the ball. Raiders are going to get a chip shot field goal to win by one. They end up turning the ball over and losing the game with no time on the clock. Special teams, attention to details, that is a premium in the National Football League.
I had no idea you were on the field for that play.
Yeah, I'm the one who started it, baby. Your boy, Lo Nils, the one who started that.
When you pull that off.
We signed 2,000 of these pitchers that were so cool. And the thing's worth about 35, 40. Someone's offered me over 100 grand for one. It's called the Music City Miracle. That play is unbelievable. They only let like me, Wycheck, and Dyson, you know, sign that thing. So yeah, you can give me a drop. That's me name dropping. So that was unbelievable.
Yeah, for the Music City Miracle.
Yes.
I remember watching that in a hotel room in Las Vegas. For any of us that remember that play or that saw it, and you can once again get on YouTube for you kids out there, one of the greatest, man. One of the greatest of all times. I mean, the reason why that stood out, because you have a lot of teams now after the play here at Cal Stanford where teams will lateral football, and it's just, you know, you start to get into this rugby style, and sometimes you'll see it in D2 highlights every year. Some team in a small college or even a big college will take it to the house. But that's more of just, I mean, it's a hot potato, and there's no real structure.
Right, no structure.
You guys.
Structure.
Like, that was planned, premeditated. I mean, one of the greatest special teams play, I think, in the history of the league.
It was, but those are the things that we had Tasker on, and those are the things that you just alluded to, the ability to know what's going on, for everyone buying in. He talked about the importance of special teams, where guys, leaders on that team, Wycheck, Hall, you know, a great tight end, rest in peace, a great brother of mine, Frank Wycheck. You know, it's gone too soon, but he's a starting tight end, a Pro Bowl type of tight end, year in and year out. You had myself, you had starters on that kickoff return team because it Benji Olsen, another offensive lineman that started. We had guys
University of Washington?
Yes, and guys on that team, on that special teams, that were starters in this league because special teams meant something to you. And it has to mean something to the 49ers, and it will have to mean something to them, especially on Sunday. You're playing in prime time special teams is going to be huge, and that's why I love we had Pasker on earlier today.
Yeah, one more thing, and then we'll get off of special teams. But how much of it is, as you talked about, you're a player that, whether you're a young player that's trying to make the 53-man, and so special teams oftentimes is that avenue to do it, but it's just a springboard for me to be that wide out or be that extra running back or get into the depth chart of whatever the position might be, as opposed to just buying in, saying, I'm a special teams player like that of Tasker, I'm going to Pro Bowls, this is what I do. Could there be some conflict because some players see it as just, this is an opportunity for me to springboard to whatever position it is that I want to be on this on the roster of an NFL football team?
I think that some players just get it. They have buy-in and they know, hey, look, I am not going to stay in the league long if I can't play special teams. You look, there was a guy who played for the 49ers but played with me for 6 years. I played together with this guy and ended up playing for 15 years. Kasim Osgood, special teams guru, kind of like a Tasker guy. You can look him up. Called him today because I wanted to talk about special teams. How did he last that long? Kasim Osgood. I was done playing, and Kasim was still playing in year 14. I called Jim Harbaugh, and I say, look, you're coming here. Here's a guy that you should probably bring to your team. I'm telling you, because what he brings to the table, he's older, a little long in the tooth, but he is going to hustle, and he's going to do those things for you. Who do you think Jim brought in? He brought in Kasim Osgood, played with him with the Niners. He put him on that team because he wanted a guy that was going to show the young guys how important special teams are and how important special teams can come down to. So he went out and got a guy that was probably past his prime, but he brought him to the Niners because of special teams.
We can't talk about special teams and the San Francisco 49ers without shouting out Tabor Pepper.
Oh, you went back. Peps was good. But when you talk about just the durability of Kasim Osgood, how long he played, even though it wasn't long for the Niners, but he was Tasker-esque. That guy went to five Pro Bowls doing special teams.
Tabor Pepper, of course, is the guy who got into it, got slapped, got accosted by one Debo Samuel on the sidelines. How often do you see a long snapper in the history of the NFL get his 15 minutes? But hey, shout out to the dude.
He stood up to Debo. You know, David Ben played. My brother David.
But it's sort of to your point that hey, this is special teams, man. Don't come. If you come at him, you're coming at all of us.
Exactly. In the long snapper, he stood up for his punter. I mean, stood up for his field goal kicker. Say, look, get out. Don't talk to my guy. Debo kind of gave him to Debo. You want your cornbread. But that should have never happened. But, you know, guys, in the heat of the moment, things like this happen. But it just goes to show you, there is a huge onus that has to be put on special teams.
I tell you what, if there's any way that Tabor Pepper would go after Debo Samuel after he missed that pass for the interception last week against Green Bay, I wouldn't be here with you right now. I'd be in ER somewhere at San Francisco General because I'd be laughing so damn hard that Tabor Pepper went up to Debo Samuel and said, hey, man, we can't have that happen. But that's what happens when you're Debo Samuel and you want to point fingers and you're a captain. You can't be doing that.
The following week, look at what happens to you. And that's the thing, because the thing about it, no one wants to play bad and no one wants to, you know, be pointed at and made a mockery of, or people come down your throat or come down your lane. And that's what Debo has to realize. And he did it, you know, tongue in cheek, because he's like, hey, man, make the kick. You know, they want to win. They're in a tough situation. They're trying to turn their season around. They needed to get that win. He made the last field goal. He didn't miss any more after that. But you have to realize when you do that, now the microphone and the magnifying glass is on you. What's the saying? You point one finger, there's two pointing back at you. So you got to see that. And then the following week, you see Debo didn't have the game and people are pointing the finger. So you just have to be careful, because you're never going to play perfect and you're never going to be the best. So just understand it comes with the territory.
All right, when we come back, we'll get back to the 49ers. I do want to take a look at their next opponent as we get ahead of ourselves after Buffalo, that being the Chicago Bears. What happened to them yesterday, and of course their head coach Matt Eberflus now in the unemployment.
Oh, wow.
He's unemployed, my man. Carter Chickering.
Wow, Carter.
No mercy.
Wow.
This segment was sponsored by the all-new Honda of Vallejo. We continue. Let's talk about the Chicago Bears, and come on, man. You can't use those timeouts once the game's over. We'll break it all down for you. It's Low, it's Dan Avone here on 95.7 The Game.
Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
It is Lorenzo Neal. It is Dan Devone here on a Friday on 95.7 The Game. And it has gone final. The Las Vegas Raiders and the Kansas City Chiefs.
Wow.
I tell you what. This Kansas City Chiefs team, this is getting a little absurd.
You know what?
Well, first of all, why don't you recap what happened for those? Because the game just ended. And for a lot of us that aren't streaming, it wasn't on the quote-unquote the networks. So right. You had to have Amazon to watch this thing.
Yeah. You had a Kansas City team. They're like a cat. They have nine lives. You look at Cincinnati Bengals, had a chance to beat them that game early in the season. You saw Baltimore had an opportunity to beat them. It was 1 foot out of bounds. They were probably going to go for two. Baltimore had an opportunity to beat them. The Chargers, you just watch Kansas City.
Carolina
should have had them beat last week. They continue to. Denver had them beat the blocked field goal. Denver had them beat to win the game. And just today, less than 10 minutes ago, Kansas City gets the ball back with like 3 minutes left. They try to run the clock out. They can't do it. It's fourth down and two from the 48-yard line. They're on 48. They just think they're going to go for it on fourth, and they say, forget it. Let's punt the ball, and let's see if our defense can stop them because there's only a minute 30. Raiders get the ball on their three or four-yard line. Kansas City downs the ball. This is in Kansas City, by the way. Kansas City downs the ball. Raiders have to go, 70, 80 yards to just get in field goal range. They start the drive. They make it all the way down to the 30-yard line with 8 seconds left. The center on the Raiders, he snaps the ball a little early, and it's fumbled because it's false start. Kansas City recovers the fumble with 1 second left on the clock. And you know what happens then. Kansas City just runs the ball out. But the Raiders were getting ready to line up for a chip shot field goal. The Raiders, a 30-yard field goal to win the game. And they fumble the ball instead. And Kansas City gets the ball. The Raiders don't even have a chance to go for the win.
It has happened again with the Kansas City Chiefs. Now 11-1. And typically if I would say, and you didn't know anything, and you just woke up from a year-long slumber, and you saw that the Kansas City Chiefs were 11-1. Immediately, you would think, "Oh, well, Patrick Mahomes is balling. This is another dominant team. Look out, three-peat." Let's remember, a year ago they lost to the Raiders as well, and the Raiders weren't good last year. And this year, they're a two-win football team. But with that being said, I mean, because when you think about the AFC, I mean, Kansas City, you still got to give them their props, right? They're 11-1.
They find a way.
I mean, until they lose, are they still the team to beat in the AFC? Or are you going to go ahead and crown and or say, let's put the crosshairs on Baltimore and or Buffalo, the Niners' opponent?
Yeah, I can't give Kansas City. Well, Kansas City is not winning the Super Bowl.
But they're 11-1.
You're right. And that's what makes it tough. I just don't see them getting back. I don't even see them getting to the Super Bowl the way that they're playing. You saw Buffalo take it to them, find a way to beat them. They've been playing on the brink, and it's not a hangover. It's hard to go back, and it's hard to repeat and three-peat. But it's just they have been getting by. They're grinding. They're finding a way, but they don't look sharp. They don't look great. I don't think they can turn it on during the playoffs. I think they're a good team, but. They're not able to run the ball with great consistency. They just don't have it. There's no team they can just wipe out. They're not blowing teams out. I just don't see Kansas City doing it this year. Not this year.
It's a scary recipe when it's just, hey, let's just be close and then put it in the hands of Patrick Mahomes. He can do it more often than not, but that's a high wire act.
He didn't close today.
No.
They had a chance. He had a chance to close, and he was on the sideline cheering on his defense, and his defense couldn't stop the Raiders. With the backup quarterback, and the Raiders gave them everything they can handle. You're talking about just games. Who has been the biggest disappointment? What do you see when you talk about bad teams or bad play this year? I just told you a bad play by the Raiders. Is there some teams that come to mind when you say, this is just a bonehead play? Besides that, have you seen a lot this year?
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for members. Fresh Atlantic salmon portions, 7-ounce farm-raised, including marinated portions, just $5.99 each. Delicious Hass avocados or mangoes, 4 for $5, or just $1.25 each. This week's digital deal is the delicious Sumo Citrus, $2.47 per pound, limit 4 pounds. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Yeah, no, the 49ers, it's something that's earmarked this team right from Jump Street. And just to stay with the Chiefs for a moment, though, because you talked about, you know, the hangover, which, listen, when you win not only one Super Bowl, but two Super Bowls, and no one's won three in a row in the history of the league. And so we know how daunting of a task this is. And so when people make the comparisons, well, how come the Chiefs don't have a hangover? Because they're obviously the hunted. Everybody gets up for them. All the emotion of playing in all those football games. If that's the excuse for the 49ers, why doesn't it pertain to the Kansas City Chiefs? And I heard someone say this, and it was pretty poignant, and they said, because they got the hardware. Like, it's a little different when you've got the Lombardi. It's a lot easier to come back and defend that thing and have the confidence in knowing as long as we got Patrick Mahomes, we're going to run this thing back. As opposed to going to Super Bowls, going to NFC Championship games like that of the 49ers and not winning. So there's, you know, when you talk about a hangover, yeah, somewhat, I guess, well, you're not seeing it's not evident on the part of the Kansas City Chiefs, but again, the difference being is that they're in the winner's circle as opposed to the 49ers.
Yeah, they are. And I think that the biggest thing is they find a way. The Niners haven't been able to find a way. Kansas City has said, you know what? Hey, look, we're tied up. We don't want to go in overtime. Last week against the worst team in the football, the Carolina Panthers, they find a way to Mahomes take over and get a field goal to end it. They find a way. You're playing Denver. Denver's getting ready to win the game, kick a 20-yard field goal, you find a way to block it. You're playing against the Raiders today, you have a guy have the presence of mind to say, okay, even though the ball's on the ground, blowing the whistle, I'm going to jump on this ball and I'm going to recover it. So if they didn't recover it, the Raiders just would have been backed up 10 yards and still had a chance to make a field goal. But instead, the presence of mind. So they're finding a way to make something bad, turn it into something good.
And, you never want to, if you're a fan or even a member of a team, even though you're 11-1, you hate the description of you're finding a way. Like, you'd rather be either dominant or you'd rather be Buffalo, you'd rather be Baltimore, where you can say, well, we got Derrick Henry or we got Josh Allen and we're good because of X, Y, and Z. When you're good and it's because we're finding a way, I don't know.
Yeah, it's finding a way, but look where they're at. You took 11-1, and I'm with you. You're like, God, this is the ugliest 11-1 team we've ever seen, but they found a way. And yeah, I don't think they're going far in the playoffs because it looks like they just something's missing. But you can say what you want. There's teams, good teams, the Ravens, good teams, the Chargers, they found a way to beat them. Yeah. They found a way to beat them. So, yeah, you don't want to be saying that. But if you look at if you're the Niners, wouldn't you like to say, we found a way to win, though?
No, that's true.
If the Niners were 11-1, would we be having this conversation of we don't think they can get in? We're talking about a Kansas City Chiefs team that doesn't look good, but they're number one seed in the whole AFC.
Yeah. When you say finding a way, isn't that sort of an indirect description of, well, you have Patrick Mahomes?
It is, but their defense have played good. Kansas City's defense, you think about it, they allowed only 16 points today. Think about what their defense
They haven't been good the last couple of weeks.
Yeah. Couple weeks. They gave it up against, you know, Carolina, but think about what's been happening to Kansas City. It hasn't been the offense that's been carrying them.
Yeah.
It's been the defense, and now the offense is going to have to get going because the defense is getting a little tired. So, yeah, defensively this year, and that's the difference. Look at the Niners. All look at the defensive stats, but offense, they're seventh of rushing. They're fourth in total offense. They're in scoring. They're number 13. But then you say, then why aren't they winning? The biggest reason why the Niners are not winning is one thing, red zone. They're not scoring in the red zone, so teams are able to keep it close, find a way to beat them because the Niners have not capitalized in the red zone. In the red zone, they're one of the worst teams in the league. And that has been the reason why this team hasn't had a big enough lead because they're kicking field goals or they're not scoring. They're turning the ball over in the red zone. And that's why this Niner team is where they're at this year.
A year ago, they were close to 70% as far as red zone efficiency. This year, they're in the mid to low 40s, 44% the last time I checked. Isn't that a direct result of not being able to run the football in that part of the field?
I think so. I think when you can't run and teams can sit back and play cover four, cover eight, or just come after you and say, if we can hold up and play man coverage and bracket one of the best receivers or take Kittle out of it and say, let someone else beat man coverage, we're going to bracket Kittle, double him, and say Kittle's not going to be productive in this red zone, and say, okay, make someone else beat you and you can't run, and then the pressure gets to you and make the quarterback hang on to the ball and make him go to a second and third read. That's exactly what's happening to the Niners, and they can't hold up offensively up front. And so that's why you're seeing the red zone not look as good this year.
Once again, the Kansas City Chiefs just moments ago improved to 11-1 with another victory, this time over the Las Vegas Raiders, the Raiders who beat them last year at KC, now 2-10 on the season. So that phone's ringing, and I'm Antonio Pierce. I'm like, uh-oh, because it's just, I don't know how he's sleeping these days.
Yeah.
Because Antonio Pierce, and this leads us to a conversation that you and I were having off air. Listen, Bill Belichick is going to be coaching somewhere in the NFL next year.
No question.
That's a foregone conclusion.
Right.
The Raiders could be one of those teams that make a phone call to the legendary former New England Patriot head coach. The other, which?
Jacksonville.
Jacksonville. And listen, you always look at the quarterback, right? And Trevor Lawrence, I know Trevor Lawrence has struggled over the last 2 years. Let's not forget how young this guy is. And there's still a lot of upside to him. And let's also not forget that it was just a short 2 years ago. I'm sorry to go here, Lo, but your Chargers, he came back from the dead 27-0 and took it to him.
Yeah.
And then put Kansas City, you know, in that next round. Yeah, they were close to knocking off the Chiefs. So I don't know if I'm out. I think it's one of those where if Trevor Lawrence is the quarterback of your football team, I think you got a shot. It's just a matter of Bill. You're just saying to Bill Belichick, please, please.
Go building.
Teach us how to win.
Right.
Just come here and we have some pieces, but just teach us how to do this.
Right.
And I think that that's applicable to Jacksonville and the other team, just to bring it back to the 49ers. Matt Eberflus, after yesterday, which we want to get into, gone as the head coach, fired today.
Man, wow. Life.
I tell you what, Carter.
Carter, you're rough, baby. You're rough.
Unemployment's nothing to laugh at.
Is it not deserved?
No, you're right.
Are you not entertained? Are you not?
That was horrible yesterday. Can we just say it?
That was. That's fireable. That's fireable. You know? But a lot of people, you have a timeout, and it was set the stage. You look at a Chicago Bear team playing against the number one team in NFC, playing against Detroit on Turkey Day, and you battle back. You're only down 17-3 at halftime, but you battle back and you make this a game, and you just need a field goal to take it into overtime, and you fight like hell to get back in that game. You already crossed the 50-yard line. You're in pretty much, it's going to be a long field, but you have a shot. You have a timeout left with like 10 seconds left, and you don't have the presence of mind as a head coach to call timeout. What's more fireable, that? It, or do you talk about the Niners when you have back-to-back 12 men on the field and you get a penalty the first time, and now you have a time to adjust, and you still get another one back-to-back?
Well, I think it's fireable as far as Schneider's concerned, certainly not Kyle Shanahan. But Matt Eberflus, yeah, once again, it was – so Caleb Williams had took the sack, which I think created the sort of chaotic state in the play prior to that. So the clock's running. They got 34 seconds, I want to say.
Right.
And they still have a timeout. But because of the sack, he's trying to get into the line of scrimmage, and he's trying to get him to go. But now the clock's down to 12 seconds, and you begin to realize that this is going to be the last play of the game. And you have 30 seconds where you could have called the timeout. Obviously, reset yourself. You got a rookie quarterback. Bring him to the sidelines. Breathe. Breathe, young man. This is what we want to do. We need about another good maybe 6 to 8 yards so we feel a little bit better about this field goal. Let's do something. Get out of bounds because you got, you know.
But your head coach can call timeout.
No, that's what I mean. He didn't do that.
Right. So he should have. That's when the head coach just walks on the field and says, timeout.
Yeah.
And my thing wasn't about firing Shanahan. That's when we're talking about the DC, and that's the thing. Kyle Shanahan, he'll tell you, he was engaged with the officials because Green Bay did a shady play because they didn't give them time to substitute, and that's why the Niners had 12 guys on the field in the first place. So Shanahan's letting the official understand, taking him through and coaching. He's actually educating the official of what happened. During that time, they get ready to run another play. And that's what I'm talking about, the presence of mind for another coach and the coaching staff, one up in the box that's counting and understand what personnel's on the field for offense and the coach that's on the field that's calling in the plays. So you had two opportunities to get that right. So I'm just saying, when you look at it in the scheme of things, if you're saying that this guy just got fired as a head coach, which rightfully so, don't you think Kyle Shanahan, not going to be fired, but it's going to maybe fire someone of that situation?
No doubt. I think, knowing Chicago media a little bit, and listen, it may have been a fireable offense right then and there. Like, that's enough. He was already in a hot seat. I mean, he's a guy who was a defensive coordinator with Indianapolis.
Sure, sure.
And was, if you're going to bring in a quarterback like that of Caleb Williams, you typically want somebody who's like that of an O'Connell or a Sean McVay or a Kyle Shanahan, one of those quarterback whispers that speaks the same language, which, again, when you talk about bringing in Belichick, he's not necessarily that guy, but he does know how to bring in those OCs because he has the respect of just about everybody in the league. So I think it was borderline that he was going to get fired. To me, and I can't base this on anything, when it was like, oh no, he's got to go, is after the game.
Yeah.
This is what he said. Literally, when he was asked about, can you explain the timeout and not calling it?
Right, right.
He said, and I'm quoting, this is Eberflus's last words to the media.
Oh, wow.
I like what we did there.
Oh.
Eberflus insisted.
He didn't say that.
I think we handled it the right way. I believe we could re-rack the play and get it done. It just didn't work. I'm telling you, like, after
that's fireable.
Then you're like, you know, I used to be a sportscaster, and I remember that the executives were always upstairs, the general manager, the sales team, they were just like in the ivory tower. And I was a little bit cutting edge when I was a young buck, and I would say some things, and I knew when I was pushing the edge of the envelope. And I knew, like, I used to do a Sunday night show, and sometimes I would say things that get a little outspoken, or get a little crazy. And then I'd have to go up to the general manager's office.
Walk it back?
Yeah, and I'd have to explain. I mean, that's basically, if you're going upstairs, that's usually, you know, you don't want to be up there. That's where you get fired. But because my ratings were so good, they wouldn't let me go. That's television for you. They don't really give a rip as long as you can. If they can sell you, like, they're okay with
it. You're sellable.
And so I remember on certain Mondays where I would just like, it's time to go upstairs.
I'm going up.
And that's Eberflus. After that comment, it's like, just get your butt upstairs.
Go upstairs.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I can't believe he made that statement. I understand coaches have to protect players at times, but this is protecting you. You just say, hey, look, I missed it. It was the heat of the moment. I should have called timeout. I should have got re-racked this thing. Had 30. If I would have called the timeout, it gave us about 28 seconds. We still could have threw the ball to the middle of the field and spiked the ball. Yeah. And still maybe even ran one more play, spike it, and run field goal. And then if we do throw it in the middle of the field with 10 seconds left, then we spike the ball, and then put out our field goal. So you wasted at least, plays typically last 4 to 6 seconds. 4 to 6 seconds plays. So you're talking about 32 seconds. If you call that, if timeout were 32 seconds, you could have ran at least two plays. No question, you could have ran two plays. Even if one of them was in the middle of the field, you still could have spiked the ball and ran another play. So with that being said, yes, that's fireable because you didn't give your team a chance to win that game. As hard as those men fought back to be able to beat Detroit or give them at least a chance to take that to overtime, that's on the coach. You didn't give your team a chance.
You know who's feeling a little better today? Is Shane Waldron. Because Shane Waldron got fired as the offensive coordinator, and he was replaced by Thomas Brown. And Eberflus did that, said, hey, you're out. Thomas Brown's in because he's better than you. Now Eberflus is out, and Thomas Brown is taking his job. So
elevation, Shane Waldron, sensation.
See what you asked for?
Wow,
Thomas Brown
dude.
Not only took my job, but he took yours as well. So I just want to stay with the Bears for a moment, simply because obviously that's the next opponent for the San Francisco 49ers. First of all, your thoughts on Caleb Williams as a rookie?
Well, you know what? I think he's shown some bright spots, showing that he's capable of being a good quarterback. He's
232 consecutive passes without an interception. That's a rookie record. It's never been done.
And he's done. He's got more wins than any, you know, rookie quarterback that's played for Chicago, the Bears. But that doesn't say a lot because, you know, it's been a fire sale for the last 20 years. So when you think about that, you're like, okay, how what does that really mean? But I think that I think he has a lot of talent. He has a big arm. If you get him the right coaches, like you're talking about, here's a guy that has a lot of potential and could be a good quarterback. It's early to say, but he can throw. He can make every single throw. Yeah. He's very athletic. It'll be interesting because if Belichick goes there, he has some talent. I'm going to tell you a guy that they have there, and I'm not saying that he has a lot left, but when he runs his routes, Keenan Allen.
Oh, he was huge yesterday.
Huge. That jerk route that he ran, gave him the inside, outside, and back out, and then went in for the touchdown. Keenan is really, really can help this young man even develop even more. So if you get the right head coach and get the right structure there, I think they'll be pretty good.
I was going to say, too, did you guys see what Keenan Allen said after the game?
No.
He basically kind of threw Eberflus under the bus and said, I believe the players did enough today to win the game.
See, that's what I just – and look, I didn't even read that, but what did I just say several minutes ago? Rack that. You know, let's re-go ahead and cut that piece and bring it back. That's what I was saying. They players, you didn't give them a chance. They played well enough. They fought like hell to get back in that game. You didn't give them a chance to win.
So the Chicago Bears now with a coaching vacancy. Wow, that's scary because that to me is plug and play. The defense
is good. It's plug and play.
DJ Moore, Odunze, you talked about Keenan Allen. It's a good offensive line. That's just Caleb Williams will get better.
Of course. No
and
doubt.
And you've got a franchise quarterback. If I'm Bill Belichick, I'm saying that's the marriage. I've heard a lot being kicked around, potentially New York, the Jets, which is never going to happen because he hates the owner. Jacksonville, as you had talked about, the Las Vegas Raiders. But if I'm Belichick, watch out because if he goes to Chicago – that could be a lot like, sorry to give you another NBA reference here, but Bernie Bickerstaff Jr. last year got fired from the Cleveland Cavaliers, and Kenny Atkinson, who was an assistant for many years with the 49ers. Maybe I'm just doing like a perpetual plug for Warriors this week with my man, Evan Giddings. But here comes the new head coach, Kenny Atkinson, who takes over, and he had a Cavalier team that went to the second round of the playoffs a year ago that had injuries, but were just, you could see, were good. And now they're the best team in the NBA. And that potentially could happen next year if it's Belichick and all those boys.
Oh, Chicago has it. They have a squad. You're absolutely right. You don't need a lot. You got a running back that runs hard. You have some receivers. You have a quarterback. Your defense can play pretty well right now. You get the right coach and the right individuals on that team, the right coaching staff to kind of nature that team, you're going to compete. They've been in a lot of these games. They've had opportunities to win games. They squandered them away. And some of it's been players, but a lot of it has been coaching.
Listen, I've been pretty optimistic when it comes to the 49ers, except for Sunday. I mean, it's going to take a minor miracle, I think, to beat Buffalo. And I've said, look, if you're chasing – you know, two teams that are in front of you to win the division and they're Arizona and Seattle, there should be a level of optimism there because those are two teams that are very beatable. But at the end of the day, what you've said certainly resonates that, you know, this is a team that has not been able to string together four quarters. They don't really give you a lot of hope in terms of their resume up to this point this season. And while I think that there's certainly an outside chance to go into the playoffs, there's also this reality that they may never win another game again this year. Because Detroit's for real, and yeah, they might rest their players. Miami's beat. But these are teams that could beat San Francisco. And as it relates to Chicago, I hope they're not thinking of that is going to get us on the, you know, that's going to get us straight.
No.
Because Chicago, yeah, they've lost six in a row. But if you follow those six losses, anybody that knows the Bears knows that that worm could have turned the other way. And Caleb Williams is growing and getting more confident. Who knows what the proverbial punch in the arm with a new coach coming in there. And listen, they're going to get 10 days off. It's almost like sort of a, you know, a mini bye week for them because they played on Thanksgiving. Chicago is not a team that you could take lightly.
No, they really aren't. I mean, Chicago's playing great ball. It's going to be interesting because I hope that we know that the Jets beat Seattle before that 5 o'clock tip. So the Niners, if things pan out the way it can possibly, the Niners can be looking at this saying Arizona lost because they're playing against Minnesota. The Jets can be dangerous. Aaron Rodgers and those guys might get it going in New York playing a 10 o'clock kick. So you have an opportunity. So the Niners can be looking and saying, we got a chance. So I hope it pans out that way, because then we would have to get the Niners best, because they'll be right back in the thick of things.
All right, we continue here. We're going to talk more about the San Francisco 49ers as they get ready for the Buffalo Bills in Buffalo. It's expected to snow. We'll have more conversation. I want to get into Christian McCaffrey, and we'll talk about what's right and or wrong with him these days. Back with Lowe and Dan Avone after this.